Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Whatever Arjuna says in these two verses is confirmed by Vedic truth. Vedic injunctions affirm that only one who takes the devotional service to the Supreme Lord can understand him, whereas others cannot. Each and every word of this verse spoken by Arjuna is confirmed by Vedic injunction. So again here, the element that only by knowledge received from the Lord can we actually know him, right? Because there's no other way. It means he knows himself. So how will we know? We're so small, he's so big. So we can only know through how he reveals himself. There is no other process. And he'll only reveal himself through devotional service. Because why should he reveal himself? So the point is if you're going to establish a relationship, it's got to be based on something that's going to be of mutual benefit, right? So the point is unless it's based on devotion, what is there for the Lord that will be a benefit? He is God, so whether you recognize it or not, it doesn't actually make any difference. You know what I'm saying? It just really doesn't matter. You know, we're looking at it that, yes, I'm here, and, you know, God, but the point is, it's like, you know, if there's a bunch of microbes that are floating around the room and they don't believe you exist, what does it matter to you? You know, it just really doesn't matter, right? So, this aspect that he can only be known through devotional service, that is very important, because devotion, that exchange of devotion between him and the devotees is the only thing that's important for him. Being God is just the way it is. And it's not that he can lose the position or someone else might take it. It's not like position of Indra where it's up for grabs. Right? No, this is just he's God and that's the way it is. Now, within that, what's important to him is not being God, but the interaction between himself and the devotees. Right? But because we think we're God, so the first step we have to accept that he is. Right? And not us. Then you can deal on this element of devotion, establish a relationship. Right?
Okay.
Sir? Page 12.
Maharaj. Once on preaching tour I mentioned this, that Krishna doesn't really care, you know, for the living entity, because he's got his own abode, his own devotees, and he's good. I mean, he's happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some people argue, then how is it possible that we, how do we get the mercy? If he doesn't care, then how?
But he cares about us, the personal relationship. He doesn't care that he's God and whether we accept that or not. You know what I'm saying? His position of God, just like, let's say, you have a celebrity.
Yeah.
Why are they a celebrity?
Because people accept them as such.
Yes, because people accept them as such. If nobody accepted the person as a celebrity, they wouldn't be one.
Right.
You know, they walk out of their house, there's no people there with cameras. They walk down the street, get in the store. Even they go in front of somebody's camera and they kind of like, excuse me, you know, like that, you know, and stuff. You know what I'm saying? They're not a celebrity anymore. But God, whether we accept him as such or not, still is. He still is the origin of everything, the original person. It is still his potency that makes everything. It's still his creation. He's still in control of everything down to even a blade of grass moving. So the non-caring is on the position. It means his position does not depend upon us acknowledging him or not. You know, like the child that goes through life wishing, you know, waiting for the day his parents will acknowledge his, you know, success. You know. It's not like that. It's that he's the, but he cares for the living entity. That's why he's sitting in the heart of every living entity. So he's always with every living entity. So as an individual, he cares about each soul. But it's his position as God is not dependent upon us, right? But at the same time, it's because he is perfect, then we could, our interaction with him will be satisfying to the Lord when it's perfect. So our overly, how you say, proud activities, they're not going to be very impressive to him. You know, it's that sincere affection that attracts his mind. You know, it's just like the parent is so much bigger and greater than the child. Right? The child's nobody in the world. But the child does something, you know, with great affection, even though it's something extremely simple, not of any major consequence. It impresses the parent. Right? You know, so that's the point. So the parent always cares for, but their position as a parent, that this is my house, and you know, this is, you know, and I'm this person in the community, that has nothing to do with whether the child accepts it or not. Does that make sense? He's not dependent upon us for his position. He's not even dependent on us for his satisfaction. But because he's unlimited, so therefore that satisfaction having are always expanding. So then we can take part in that ever-expanding happiness. So the same, both things are working at once. It's hard for us to understand because the soul by nature is feminine, so it's dependent. You know, so we will either have, we generally tend to have an unrealistic concept of the masculine position. You know, unrealistic, yeah, because it's like it's something we don't really understand. Because the masculine is something else, right? Feminine we understand because means the feminine meaning the position of dependency. So it's either I care or I don't care. Because in the material world, if you don't care, if you don't care that you're cared for by the others, so that's your position. So it's still a dependency, you know what I'm saying? Like that kind of a thing. So, like, if nobody cared that you don't care, that would bother you. But that everybody's worried about you don't care, you know, then it has some meaning. Yeah. You know, so that's the so he's simultaneously self-satisfied, but he can care at the same time. That's the thing. If we work on the platform, self-satisfied means there's nothing else that we're connected to. Or if we're, you know, interactive, then we're totally dependent. But that's the thing, is he is completely independent, but he cares. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it catches both points. So therefore, if we're too proud, you know, if a child does something and is so proud about what they do and all that, then basically everybody kind of like, nobody cares. Like that. But if it's sincerely meant, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like when you do something and just do it and everybody's like so impressed. And then when the next time you do it, you think this is really going to impress everybody. Nobody cares at all. You know, thing, because that's the point, is the quality of the interaction doesn't have any meaning when the false ego is there, because then it's all about you, it's not about the interaction. You know, or not about that they can take part in it.
So can we say that Krishna really starts to care for the living entity when we become a devotee, like personally?
You can say he always cares. It means that when we become a devotee, then the interaction becomes, you could say, real, because then it's direct. Mm-hmm. Before that, it's indirect. Means we're interacting with God at every moment anyway. That's what we're doing, but we're not recognizing it, so he doesn't reciprocate in such capacity. You think it's that this dead matter is making me happy, so then he, that potency is through that dead matter, that's how he reciprocates. You know, you see some aspect, quality of God through the dead matter, you think it's the dead matter, so he reciprocates through the dead matter. So doing that is not very, because that's just management, really. Just organizing things. Let's say the person won't, let's say the child won't talk to you, won't recognize you, has nothing to do with you. And so, you know, let's say you're living in another part of the house, big house, so let's say it's got a granny flat, you know, like that. So you're living there, but because it has no connection with the main house that you can see. So they think they're in the house alone. But you're still paying the rent, taking care of everything, seeing that the lawn's mowed and all these different things. So they're there. And then you'll come over and put some food in the fridge. Right? And so they're not really very conscious of, you know, what's going on. So, you know, they open the fridge, there's something there, see something they like, they eat that. So then you seeing what they like, you put more of that in the fridge. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So they, to them, it's not you putting it there, it's the fridges providing it. You understand?
Yeah.
So that's what's going on. We think it's the body that's providing the interaction, when it's actually the Lord. Mm-hmm. So how it is that we deal with that body is how the Lord will reciprocate through the body. It's still the same principle of rasa. Rasa doesn't change. You have the ashray and the vishay. So we think we're the enjoyer, when actually Krishna's the enjoyer. So how we see Krishna in whatever forms and shapes, that's therefore how he'll respond with us. It still works on the same principle. Like Mother Jashoda sees him as her child, so he responds as a child. She's feeding him, so then he'll respond in that way, but that's direct. Because you're dealing with him as a person. Here, it's through the matter we're directing. So for him, this is just organization, so it's not a big deal. So the whole material manifestation is going on with just a spark of his potency. Right? But in direct personal dealings, then we see the full manifestation of that whatever it is we're attracted to. So that's why devotional service said it's unlimitedly times greater. You know, there's no comparison. You know, I mean, if we're taking the whole material phenomena as a drop, and then just the being situated spiritually as an ocean, right? And then we're taking that ocean then as a fragment of a portion of a drop, not even, you know, and to an unlimited ocean. So it's that we go through these two stages just to get to, you know, some kind of getting a little bit of an idea. So that's why, it's because it means, let's say we're attracted by, let's say, beauty. So beauty's in so many things. You know, people, you know, have some beauty, the animals, the nature, the birds, you know, the rock formations, all kinds of things. There's beauty in everything like that. So that's just, each one has just that ability to reflect that little bit. But it's still reflecting the same beauty. You know, just like the sun is there and you have so many pots of water. You look in each pot, the sun is in each pot, but there's only one sun, right? So there's only the one source of that beauty, but so many unlimited things are showing, reflecting a little bit of that, right? Now, that source of that, you know, so even just we're looking at all that reflection put together, it still doesn't compare. You know, so that's the thing, is that when we become a devotee, then we're dealing with the personality of Godhead. Otherwise, up to then, we're only dealing with Brahman and Paramatma. You know, which is still unlimitedly great compared to whatever is going on here. But it has no comparison to the actual, you know, reciprocation there. So he always cares. Otherwise, why would he create, make the creation and come as Paramatma in the heart, expand into everything so that we have it? Because he cares. It's just that because he only reciprocates how we deal, because he is everything. So it's like, you know, well, why doesn't he? No, but what first step he would take? You know, because he has unlimited qualities. So which one you would be interested in, and to what degree, and what situation, and all that. So therefore, we have to take that first step. He'll take 10 towards us, but we have to take the first step. You know, because you don't know how to deal. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the point is relationship means the ashray has an interest to see the vishay in that way. You know what I'm saying? Like we're looking at food, and we're looking at taste. But it also, you know, has, you know, particular, you know, cellular structure. You know, so, but that's not what we're looking for in reciprocation. So we're looking for taste. Right? That, but the food has so many other aspects. Right? So that's the one thing that's there. It also, you know, weighs something, you know, so it's like, you know, your boat's, you know, having little problems, you know, with balance. You could put enough food on one side of the boat, it would, you know, make the balance, you know, so you could use it as ballast, you know, like that, you know, how you say, 275,000 sandwiches, you know, they're using as ballast on the ship, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So then, does that make sense? So the point is he always cares, he's always there. We give the element, so it's just like, let's say you have the element that, okay, the angels are up to no good, you know, just kind of, you know, talking to Jalpa, messing around like that, and then God walks in, right? So then what happens, right? Everybody starts freaking out, right? Because they see, you know, the idea is, you know, God's this great, big, powerful guy, and he's, you know, quite unforgiving. You do something wrong, you're in trouble, right? So, because that's how you see God, then he'll reciprocate that way. Because otherwise, what is the relationship between you and God? Right? You know, so if I do something wrong, then, you know, God will do something. So, you know, I'm doing something I don't think is right, and then this happened that's bad, and so that means God must be telling me to do that. So he just reciprocates as you approach him. Does that make sense? So he always cares, but he can't actually interact personally, you know, as the personality of Godhead until you accept him as such. Otherwise, we're only accepting God as Brahman, generally. You know, as the potency that's there, because that's what's attracting us. You know, the shininess of it, or the power of it, or the beauty of it, or the, you know, the economics of it. You know, it was such a good deal. You know, you know, like that. And so, you know, whatever it is that is the element, it's that quality. So that's Brahman that we're attracted to. And so, therefore, he's reciprocating on that level. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, you say, doesn't care, then why would he care for us? You know, and then it's, you know what I'm saying? Then it becomes, the element is then, because you are dealing, we said, with the, you know, overall overriding feminine nature, then there's a sense of insecurity. You know, so you don't want to bring that out, because that's not actually what it is. The point is he doesn't care for all these mundane position and power and money and wealth and a show of that, because it's all his anyway. You know what I'm saying? So that's the... Yeah, is this
okay? Imagine the analogy of the house when the boy is upset. In the analogy of the house when the boy who is there alone in the big house turns to the small house and recognizes the relationship, that's when something dynamic...
Because then he recognizes, well, the house actually belongs to the father. You know, all that time he's going in the illusion that's his house.
So it's the difference between caring and appreciating. He cares for us always. He appreciates when we become devotees.
Yeah, it's just like the parent always cares for the child, even when he's doing things wrong. But when he does things right, then he appreciates.
Regarding your point about celebrity, does that mean that a democratically elected leader is in a more feminine position than like autocratic? He's not dependent on it.
So it just depends how far the democracy's taken. You know, in other words, if once they're in power, then means you can't remove them, then it works. It just means that you're more agreeable. You know what I'm saying? It's just like once the president's elected, it's not that the people can all get together and vote him out. You know, he is the president. It's just the way it is. You know, so it's... But... You know, something that always is dependent upon that, like we said, the celebrity. So you're popular today, so then you're big. But if tomorrow someone else comes up and does something, you know, different and all that, then all the attention goes there, and then you're just kind of left there.
Mm-hmm. You know? So we probably also have to define elected in some cases.
That's another thing. But you do have that element, because it is that you've elect for 4 years, and after that, then they don't I forget who was describing it, but one of the presidents was describing that when the new president is elected, he's still not the president, so the old president is still in power, and then there's a certain day, you know, when the power is handed over. So when the president walks into that assembly, he still comes with all the guards and all the everybody and everything and all the position. He comes up there and says this, that, blah. And then the new person steps up, and then he steps to the side. And after that, all those bodyguards are watching the new one. And then at that moment, it just hits you. You have no position, no power, no anything anymore. You're just another guy in the assembly. You know, he just said, it's just so... You know, overwhelmingly stark how that just happens. You know, because everybody in the moment is all thinking the new president, no one worries about the old one. So he's just there on the side, and everything's about him, and you could be there, you could say anything you want to anybody, and nobody, it wouldn't matter. You know, so it's, you do have that thing, there is a dependency. But ultimately, everybody's dependent on the Lord, because then that position of power, it's just, that's one of the ways you can do it. Because the democratic element is part of the social system. All these systems, that, you know, independence, you know, what do you say, the anarchical kind of element, the monarchical, the democratic, and the socialist things, all of those aspects are all there in the Vedic system. You know, it's just what's applied where and how much. So it's not one system, it's the four of them blended together. And each one has its strengths, so that's where it shines, and where its weaknesses, that's where it doesn't, is not functioning, and one of the others that's its strength works, that's where it goes. Because each one has one side that's very good and one side that's weak. Right, so wherever it's strong, that's where it's prominent. That's where it's used. And wherever it's weak, that's where the other systems are used. Mm-hmm. So then you have a complete system that doesn't have any weaknesses to it. Mm-hmm. Right? Other than, you know, someone having the qualifications. You know, that's the only thing. Does that make sense? So ultimately everything is dependent on Krishna. So it's, one through four. Arjuna said, "By my hearing the instructions you have kindly given me about these most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion has now been dispelled. O lotus-eyed one, I have heard from you in detail about the appearance and disappearance of every living entity, and I have realized your inexhaustible glories. O greatest of all personalities, O supreme form, though I see you here before me in your actual position, as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours, if you think that I am able to behold your cosmic form. O my Lord, O master of all mystic power, then kindly show me that unlimited universal self."
Was it just curiosity on
the side? Basically, just to see how that works. You know? But the problem is because it's in everything that is also beyond your... It's beyond your sphere. You know, it's like, even within your, let's say, what you'd call your world, you know, means what you... what values you have and what mediums through which you would experience that. You don't experience the whole world all at once. One part at a time, one aspect at a time. And you may have here, and then you have other parts of the world you go to or other things. And so if all that happened at once, everything, all the fullness of all that at once, that would be overwhelming. Let alone everybody else's, how they perceive the world, all happening at once. And that's just here. Then you have all the heavenly planets, the lower planets, you know, all those different things. So it becomes a bit wild.
Out of the comfort zone.
Yes, out of the comfort zone. Yes.
The other point is that it's contrasting this method versus the first. One is like the Shabda Praman, just accepting from authorities. In this one, the type of cognition through revelation or through sensual or like the protection anuman. Is that another way of looking at it?
Well, it's also you bringing the what means, means actual pratyaksha, means taking Shabda and being able to see it through the senses. When we start with the senses as a method of knowledge, it'll always be imperfect because you can't perceive the Lord through the senses. So therefore, it won't have a proper full connection. But if you start with the Lord, you know, you start with authority, then you can therefore see that element in your, through your senses and whatever you're dealing with. So then you could say it's an aspect of being able to see that element. Because he's saying, he says, "I see you here as the supreme form. I see you here before me in your actual position. As you've described, I wish to see how I've entered into the cosmic manifestation." So he understands the Bhagavan aspects, but he would like to see how he found in the Brahman aspect. You know, how he enters and all that. Yeah, like that interest sanker. You know, now, as far as... Now, Arjuna realizes that Krishna is the supreme. Now, as far as Krishna, Arjuna is concerned, he says that his illusion is over. This means that Arjuna no longer thinks of Krishna as a mere human being, as a friend of his, but as the source of everything. Arjuna is very enlightened and is glad that he has such a great friend as Krishna. But now he's thinking that although he may accept Krishna as the source of everything, others may not. Right. Okay, so this is his point. So it's not so much just interest, but I guess more of others' lack of interest. You know? So in order to establish Krishna's divinity for all, he is requesting Krishna in this chapter to show his universal form. Actually, when one sees the universal form of Krishna, one becomes frightened. like Arjuna. But Krishna is so kind that after showing it, he converts himself again into his original form. Arjuna agrees to what Krishna has several times said. Krishna is speaking to him just for his benefit. So Arjuna acknowledges that all this is happening to him by Krishna's grace. He is now convinced that Krishna is the cause of all causes and is present in everyone's heart as the super soul. Because then by showing that, then everybody has to accept that he's the Supreme Person. He's accepted, now he wants everybody else to accept. Right? So he is there as the Supreme Person and people aren't necessarily accepting that, but, you know, because they don't accept the position as God. So if you do something like universal form, then generally only God can do that. So it kind of appears to finish off anyone's doubts. Seals the deal.
Yes. What's common in our preaching is we say, oh, but you can taste it for yourself. You don't have to take our word for it. This isn't something
that's
dogma.
Yes, yes.
But isn't Arjuna kind of demonstrating that actually that's a superior method, just to accept right off the bat? And he's saying, for the rest of you, I'll show you.
Yeah, I would say it's more out of kindness. It wouldn't be so much out of, for all you idiots out there. Yeah, though he's from the big city, he's from Hastinapur, Idanas, the big city, still he's not from New York, so that element of, he doesn't have to, he doesn't have to do that. there's the element of just the greatness is so great that you don't have to, others don't have to. Point is, Arjuna, one's realization doesn't depend upon others appreciating that or not. Does that make sense? That's the thing. Yeah, the position or ability doesn't change. But if others appreciate it, then in this case they'll get benefit. Lesson 6. For the materialist, Krishna is perceived in the impersonal display of the material energy. Okay, 10:17. Oh, through 42. This is a big run, this one. O Krishna, O Supreme Mystic, how shall I constantly think of you, and how shall I know you? In what various forms are you to be remembered, O Supreme Personality of Godhead? So this is 10th chapter. So, we're still working with this aspect of the universal form. Okay, the common man can conceive only the all-pervasive aspect of the Lord. As it is stated in the previous chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is covered by his yoga maya. Only surrendered souls and devotees can see him. Now, Arjuna is convinced that his friend Krishna is the Supreme Godhead, but he wants to know the general process by which the all-pervading Lord can be understood by the common man. Common men, including the demons and atheists, cannot know Krishna because he is guarded by his yoga maya energy. Again, these questions are asked by Arjuna for their benefit. The superior devotee is concerned not only for his own understanding, but for the understanding of all mankind. So Arjuna, out of his mercy, because he is a Vaishnava, a devotee is opening for the common man the understanding of the all-pervasiveness of the Supreme Lord. Because if you ask me how do you define God? He's the greatest, or he is all pervading, he's all knowing. It's all impersonal aspects that they'll define.
What does
pervasive mean? Pervasive means like everywhere, entering into everything, like that. Okay. He addresses Krishna specifically as yogin, because Sri Krishna is the master of the yogamaya energy, by which he is covered and uncovered to the common man. The common man who has no love for Krishna cannot always think of Krishna. Therefore, he has to think materially. Arjuna is considering the mode of thinking of the materialistic persons of this world. The words keshu keshu chabhaveshu refer to the material nature. The word bhava means physical things. Because materialists cannot understand Krishna spiritually, they are advised to concentrate the mind on physical things and try to see how Krishna is manifest by physical representations. So we had the aspect before that we'll say, okay, well, that's for the common man, you know. But at the same time, as it was, Prabhupada was explaining before, is that the neophyte devotee tends to relate with God through the impersonal aspect. You know, I'm here, and so I get money, so therefore God loves me. Or, you know, my enemy, you know, stopped their persistence, so therefore God loves me. You know, stuff like that. Does that make sense? So it's these aspects is still just the qualities of the Lord. It's not Him Himself as a person. We connecting that to the person, but still we're perceiving God through the impersonal. That makes sense, because the material energy is an impersonal manifestation of the Lord. It's just the Brahman potency, right? But that doesn't mean impersonal. Doesn't mean that it doesn't have form. Mm. Personal means personal interaction, direct interaction. Does that make sense? We're contaminated by the idea that impersonal means there is no form. Mm. You know, it means, let's say two people are talking, and then then after the conversation, said, how did it go? It says, well, it was a bit impersonal. Mm. But no, you were talking right with the person. How can it be impersonal? You know, because they weren't relating to you. It was some general kind of... Does that make sense? So, technically we don't have problem that impersonal has form. It just means that interaction. So, therefore we will consider an impersonal dealing not so good, because it doesn't have that degree of relationship or that experience, the intensity of interaction. So, therefore we can understand that if the whole material world is functioning on that, all we're doing is choosing between, you know, really impersonal and kind of impersonal. Kind of impersonal. Wow, that was so interactive, you know. But the idea of actual personal, that's not what we're dealing with.
So we can't say that, for example, when we chant the holy name, we're chanting and we are inattentive. So we're dealing
impersonal. Because Krishna's right there, but we're thinking of, you know, breakfast. When will the Maha Shop open? Did they make pizza today?
Prasad is directly Krishna's.
It's also there, but then when you're eating prasad, then you're thinking of, I wonder if anybody's going to see me. And so, you know what I'm saying? So whatever we're dealing with Krishna, we're always thinking of someone else, something else. You know. But at the same time, yeah, okay, that would be... So then, okay, we're sitting there and thinking about, you know, what's happening at home, because the construction's going on and the laborers are there, and, you know, are they going to do what we want, or are they going to steal anything, or, you know, so then, does that work better?
You're on the road.
With the deities. If we develop a relationship personally with the deities, but... Can you say it is personal relationship with Krishna?
Yeah, it is. We're devotees, so that's there. The point is that pure devotion means it's based on that. But mixed means that it may be through something we're relating to Krishna, or that we're dealing in activities of service, but we're not thinking of them. Like that. But the point is, we can direct, means we the direct interaction is there, but the relationship is not direct. That's the point. Our relationship is as the servant of the servant of the servant. Like we're saying, you have a big family. You have a position in that family because of your connection with your own father, right? And so that's how then you can directly deal with your uncle or your cousin or nephew or grandparent. You can directly interact, but your relationship with them is not direct. You know, like your cousin, it's that, you know, your parents, you know, their, you know, siblings, you know, and then there's that, you know, so there's a, you know, there's always some connection. Does that make sense? So the relationship is indirect, but the interaction can be direct. You know, you're there dressing the deities, but you're dressing the deities assisting the spiritual master dressing the deities. See, so does that make sense?
Personal, does that mean that we're adjusting to the person, or is it okay that we're just conscious that it's a person, or does it also mean that we're adjusting our behavior or our way of interacting?
Whatever means, if there's some need, then yes, and maybe there's no need of any adjustment, it's just a matter of the consciousness. The main thing is the consciousness. If you change that, everything else will naturally adjust. Because the consciousness, therefore, on the material phenomena. Mm-hmm. And then within the material phenomena, whatever specific kind of interest we have, that's the gross manifestation. Mm-hmm. So it all actually goes back to consciousness. You change the consciousness to spiritual, then that will change what the material interest is, what the interest is. So that naturally changes the forms. Mm. Mm. Right? So if we focus on consciousness, that's, you know, not on the external. It's on the consciousness. Does that sound sense? Yeah. So the consciousness is on, because we're relating to everything. We say, I'm a very personal person, but you're still relating that it's the body that's interacting. Mm. It's actually the Lord's potency. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The jiva wants to be involved in that kind of interaction, so therefore the Lord's arranging it, but it's still, it's God's potency. And the living entities are just taking part, assisting in that. You know, just like the Lord is having his pastimes. We can assist in those pastimes.
But concentrating on the consciousness can take the form of material action. I mean, we do sadhana to affect our consciousness so that we can be personal with Krishna.
Means you're using... You're using Krishna's energies. It means that Krishna's energies and these energies are offering back to Krishna. Mm. Like Ganga water being offered back to Ganga water. Mm. Back to the Ganges. Mm. So, but that process is still, since you're dealing with the Lord's energies, the energies, you have to deal with the energies as they are pleased to be dealt with. Mm. Because their only purpose is to please Krishna. So there's only certain activities, or there's authorized activities that they which mean how they engage in the Lord's service. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So if we take part in those authorized activities, and they're authorized because that is the service. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, the child writes a list of what he would like for Christmas to Santa. Okay, now, the parents then buy something off that list. So, is there any worry that something will be wrong? No, because that's the list of what they said. What they want is what's on the list. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's how the Shastra works.
Yeah, it's the best
of what God and the devotees want, that's what's given in Shastra. Yeah. So if you follow Shastra, then it's what they want.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's still the mood.
Mm.
The mood is important. You know, so it's just the medium. So you're engaging the Lord's energy in the Lord's service, but according to the directions given by the Lord and his energies.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter why we're using the term energy, because it doesn't matter whether it's the external energy or the internal energy, it's still the same principle. So when you use the external energy in the Lord's service, then you're qualified to use the internal energy in the Lord's service. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you can use the knife properly, so now you could use the ceramic knife or something. Or, you know, you ride your bicycle properly, so now you can have a better bicycle, you know, or the old, you know, that extra car, you drive it around and, you know, it's come back, there's no dings in the bumpers or the fenders, you know, so now you can drive the main car, you know, like that. So it's you have to practice on the inferior energy, you know, to use the superior energy. Because the problem is the superior energy is conscious, while the inferior energy is not.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. Just like you bang up the car doesn't really care. Right? But if the car was conscious, you know, it would be a problem. You know, your dad driving down the road says, you put a dent in my bender again, says, hey, get over it, you know, move on. We're going like that. No, why should I move on? Why can't you just drive better? You know, says, no. And so you want to drive yourself? Yeah, I can do that. You know, so, you know. But you have to get out. Door opens.
Quite a sight, moving down the street.
Yeah. Couples and all, hey, what's going on here? So, car's going to try. I said, oh, really like that. And then the car goes, you stay out of this. So because materialists cannot understand Krishna spiritually, they are advised to concentrate their mind on physical things and try to see how Krishna is manifested by physical representations. So in other words, those things that we see directly connected with the Lord, then we would use that process. We wouldn't use some other process. Right? You know, like Krishna's name or non-different. So we're focusing on that aspect of the deity of the Bhagavatam or Prasad, like this. So we're able to see the direct, but then let's say an area where we are attached, you know, to, you know, something material, to our money or our position. So we're looking at that materially. So therefore then we are advised to concentrate the mind on physical things, on that thing, but see its connection to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's just it means we've been discussing this for years, and it's fine. But now that we've brought it out, that's the method of seeing Krishna. You know, we've said, well, this is the Brahman platform, but then we use it, you know, using that impersonal element. That's kind of like the wording throws us off. And then, okay, well, yes.
If we're more attached to physical forms, wouldn't it be easier for someone chanting japa to concentrate on Krishna's form rather than the sound vibration? Because isn't that, from our conditioned perspective,
not necessarily, because we like to hear things. I mean, what do you concentrate, you know, the concentration, let's say someone's listening to music. You know, it's not that there's necessarily a form that's important. You know, I mean, nowadays you have to have a video with it, otherwise nobody has enough attention span. but somebody who appreciates music, just the sound of the music, is they can absorb themselves. So that's the thing, the person who can absorb themselves in that, then, you know, does that make sense? So first is name, because that's how you know something. Something is name, then once you connect the name to the form, then when you hear the name, you think of the form. But you have to see the form, because if one has to say you concentrate on the name, that means we don't have the connection to form, qualities, and pastimes. You know what I'm saying? Let's say there's somebody you've never met. Right? And so, therefore, I describe the person, right? But it's only through hearing. And so then that gives a name. So then when you hear the name, you think of all those qualities you've heard. Now let's say you've seen the person from a distance. Now when I say the name, the form will automatically be there. You don't have to go through those other steps. Right? Now let's say you've interacted with the person, so then you the quality of that they have, you know, they're pleasant or, you know, whatever it is, the quality that strikes you. Then when I say the name, you think of that person's qualities, right? But if you're an associate of the Lord, then when I say the name, then you think of some pastime. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the process. So it's not about, well, I like to do this or I like to do that, or, you know, it's all kinds of, you know what I'm saying? The point is that the name itself is how you say, overwhelming just on its own, let alone adding the other aspects. But we're taking kind of, well, how that name, for, so name's on the bottom, so. You know, it's kind of like we like to do with everything, you know. Varnash, yeah, shoot, they're on the bottom. Brahman's on the top, yeah. But the point is we have to remember that we're below that. You know, name, that's still real rasa. You know, that's it's real. So we're not used to real. So the name is way above whatever experience we've ever had within the material plane. You know, just like Shudra is way above any idea of what we would have of, you know, what walks around on two legs and has an arms and a head, you know, and wears clothes instead of being covered with hair. You know, like that. You know, so then. You know what I said?
Yeah. Since the name in the form, so form means we remember the photograph, like some DVD picture of Krishna, something like. So if you do.
If that's what happens, when you hear Krishna's name, that's automatically what comes there, then you're on the platform of form. But if you just hear the name, you've heard the name, and then when you go, okay, chant, well, I like to think of the picture, it means you're still on the platform of hearing. But better to think of the picture than to be thinking about, you know, the plumber that's, you know, fixing the sink. You know what I'm saying? So it's okay, but this whole exercise, you know, or what do you call it? Profiling? Profiling. Yeah, I can't remember the thing of, you know, peacocking, profiling. These kind of things, they get together, watch out, why I do this? No, but I think this. We're all sitting, it's like, you know, in reality, that's profiling. Yeah, so in reality is that, you know, we would be happy with the name. There's this pastime where Krishna goes to write a letter to Radharani, and he just writes Ra, the first syllable, and he just goes in ecstasy for the whole day. And then they take this syllable to Krishna, and he sees that, I mean, say it to Radharani, and then she just writes, you know, the crit, and then she, the same thing happens to her. So they have no problem in just being absorbed in the name. You know, we're the ones that, no, except for pastimes, everything else is, you know, really small time, so, you know, I'm advanced, so therefore it's good. The point is the name itself, then on top of that you add the other elements. You know what I'm saying? So they don't have any problems. So when Lord Chaitanya is talking about absorption of the name, Rupa Goswami is talking about absorption of the name, it means they're hearing also. Right? Just like earth includes all five. Right? So the point is hearing includes the form, the qualities, the pastimes, the paraphernalia, the associates, the dham. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that. Because otherwise, we say, oh, well, the picture of Krishna is just Krishna. But is Krishna ever alone? If he's alone, that's Paramatma. Right? Krishna is with somebody. He's always with the devotees. You know what I'm saying? So then if you picture nobody's so beautiful, then that's the quality. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's just, we don't even necessarily, you know what we're talking about. But, you know, it kind of works for us when we sit around and talk and stuff like that.
Posturing.
Posturing, yes, that's it. Posturing. I wouldn't want to. Oh, that, yeah, in Dorka. No, but see, is that what's happening here, this is kind of a very different angle. This is coming from the feminine perspective. Like that. It's coming from the feminine perspective, that wouldn't he want to be alone? Because, you know, the point is, if you're always with people, to make being with people nice, you have to be alone. Right? But the men don't mind being with the ladies all the time. It's the women who need that time to be alone, to nourish a relationship. You know, so men like to do something and they get something done. But as far as experiencing interaction, they don't mind being all day. You know what I'm saying? But in any case, it works out because the gopis get their time when they're not with Krishna, because then he's with the cowherd boys, or, you know, then like that, then he's with Mother Yashoda. So, you know, everybody gets their time on their own, but, you know, but Krishna's always with somebody like that. That's the masculine principle. It's different like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So he doesn't have a problem. We have a problem. Hey, go to the spiritual world here. Always be with somebody. Hey, I'm not going.
Nice try.
Yes. Like, I remember we were sitting there, the Sunday feast, and there were some you know, some people in common like that, seeing them preaching, and, you know, say, yeah, you go to the spiritual world, and then, you know, it's free, there's no lust or anything. The guy just stopped eating and looked at it, no lust? No lust. I said, no lust. I said, well, I don't want to go there. Okay, change the conversation. Okay. You know, like that. So. So, yeah. But it does mention that Bhaktivinoda Thakura is mentioning one of the songs that you have your own private cottage in a grove given by Lalita Devi, so therefore you do have that time alone. For it's your own, no one else is going to be there. Yeah. Okay. 10:18. O Janardana, again, please describe in detail the mystic power of your opulences. I am never satiated in hearing about you, for the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words. Right? So, the devotional, you can hear it again and again, and it just increases. The material, but you're never satiated because it's so nice, you can hear it again and again and again. The material, then, we're not satiated, so then we try to hear again and again, but it doesn't give us any pleasure, so we have to keep hearing something else, something else, something else. Does that make sense? But here it's a matter, please describe in detail the power of your opulences. So he was describing opulences before. Right? So now again, topics about Krishna are ever fresh. Now as far as Amrita, nectar, is concerned, any narration or statement concerning Krishna is just like nectar. And this nectar can be perceived by practical experience. Modern stories, fiction, and histories are different from the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, in that one will tire of hearing mundane stories, but one never tires of hearing about Krishna. Like that. You know, it means at the time it doesn't seem like it. You know, like that. You know, the 8-year-olds can watch Lion King for the 573rd time. But, you know, somehow or another, when they get a little older, then it also gets old. Yeah. It is for this reason that only the history of the whole universe is replete with references to the pastimes of the incarnations of the Lord. So the history of the universe always connects back to the Lord. There's always the aspect of it's always told in connection with Right? Even in the Quran is in the mode of ignorance, it's still a connection to Vishnu. It's just that the people don't catch the connection to Vishnu aspect is important. They only catch the element of connection to Shiva. Mm. Nor the Rajasic, they catch the connection to Brahma. They don't connect the other aspect. You know, like that. But they're always connected to the Lord. That's what makes it ever fresh. The Puranas are histories of bygone ages that relate the pastimes of the various incarnations of the Lord. In this way, the reading matter remains forever fresh, despite repeated readings. And it says the element of God being there that makes it that. If he wasn't involved in the past, then it gets old. So as soon as you add that element. So, and the fun part is like from the previous thing, the only thing within even the mundane where we're not where God's not present in his pastimes, it's still what we're attracted to is still the Brahman aspect of God. So it's still that. So the that we're always absorbed in the Brahman, that is ever fresh. But because we think it's the dead matter that's doing it, that's why it gets old. But if one gets old, then the next thing gets, you know, we're immediately enthusiastic about the next thing, then the next thing, then the next thing. That makes sense. So we're getting tired of the dead matter, but we're always enthusiastic about interacting with God as Brahman. Does that make sense?
There's certain works of art, however, that are called timeless.
Timeless.
Like certain movies like It's a Wonderful Life you watch every Christmas, or Iliad and Odyssey people are reading thousands of years later. So does that mean that
people are reading, but you're not reading? You know, I'm saying you read it in the seventh grade. You know, have you read it since?
Right. So it has an element of being.
But it just means it has closer to something. It's not because it came out at Christmas, that's why, because a lot of things come out at that time, right? You know, because people are on a holiday, so then that's a good time to go to the movie, because otherwise what do? You're going to sit around with your family for 10 days? Yeah, no, you wouldn't want to do that. So then there's a movie, but then also your family movies come out at that time, or your thrillers, or your, you know, how you say, your fantasy, you know, something that would go like that, right? They don't bring out horror movies. They don't release those, you know, during Christmas, right? No? No?
Jack Frost.
Okay, yeah. So, does that make sense? So, the thing is that there's some element in it that is more manifesting those qualities that people are looking for. Mm-hmm. That's why it can be seen over and over again. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, it very strongly comes through. You know, that Christmas carol, because you're bringing out the thing of being selfless rather than selfish. You know, and that kind of, and that selfless helping others. So that has more of a thing than, you know, something smaller when one guy just figures out he was stupid and he should have said this and then his girlfriend would be happy. You know, that's more, you know, your individual, while the other has more of a universal application. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can there be gradations of this?
Gradations.
Does it have to be scripture, or if someone is speaking about Krishna and he's kind of making a little bit of it up, you know? Maybe it's not so ever fresh because it's not really bona fide?
Basically.
Yeah. So, how to distinguish? I mean, scripture is always ever fresh, right?
Means the point is that there's the poetic license and filling in a detail that is not mentioned there. Mm. But to add in things to, as far as the plot goes, yeah. You know what I'm saying? It says, you know, then Krishna blew his conch shell. Mm. But it doesn't say how big the conch shell was. Mm. So therefore, you know, the actor has, you want to make a point. So Krishna gets the biggest of all the conch shells. Yeah, you know, like that. You know. So that's just a poetic license. But it's not that you've changed anything. But when people add in details that aren't actually important.
If he gets his bagpipe.
Hmm?
If he gets his bagpipe.
Yeah, yeah, like that. You know. Then those become, then it becomes old. It was interesting because it was different, so it was intellectually stimulating, but it's not something you'd watch again.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So the element, the artiste, the element, you know, is there, but other than that, then it's kind of like stupid.
So generally just the acharyas, that's bona fide.
Yeah, that's bona fide. Otherwise you don't go, because how much they've told is as much details as necessary. The mind will work out the rest anyway.
Mm.
You know, so unless, you know, some detail that goes with it, let's say, you know, they were sitting under a mango tree, so the point is mango leaves have a particular shape or a particular thing, so if you add in some details of that, then that works. But if you decide, you know, why a mango tree, let's say some other tree, you know, then it's not going to have the effect. You know, or saying, or while they're sitting under the mango tree, you work out a new pastime between this pastime and that pastime. There's no need of that. So the poetic license means you just fill in those little details that are just commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they don't need to get into all the detail. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, let's say, there was Lao in the Dal, okay? So just, Chaitanya Charitamrita just mentions Lao, that there was Lao, this Lao Dal. Now, some people don't necessarily know what Lao Dal is, so then you explain that, and, you know, you bring out the element that the Lao's cut very big, because of being very soft, you know, being boiled, it'll disappear, so you cut it very big, so it has these big chunks, and that, you know, so it's very unique to other dolls, that if they had something in it, it'd be cut small. So it doesn't say that the pieces are cut big, but that's the tradition, that's how it's made. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So you haven't added anything.
Vijayabhushan, he was so expert, he could actually make dialogue between Arjuna and Krishna without...
Well, it doesn't mean that dialogue didn't happen.
No.
You know what I'm saying? In other words, the Gita, the Mahabharata, is being written for a particular audience. So then these other aspects within it, then it might get very voluminous to work. So he chooses, you know, the essential points.
Because, in the sikhas, it seems more like prose. They're just having a conversation, whereas...
Because that's what they're having. But just Sanskrit, the conversation is happening in poetry.
Mm.
I'm saying, but they're just having a conversation.
Mm.
Oh. Does that make sense?
No, I didn't catch...
Means they're having a conversation. The form of it may be, because they're using Sanskrit, it's being done in poetry.
Oh.
You know, so they're speaking in anustu.
Yeah.
Like that. But the point is that the interaction is just a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the conversation element is all he's bringing out there, because it'll make it more clear, because of the poetry we may or may not always catch what's there. So he gives it in a, you know, in prose, so that you can appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. Because otherwise, these are the connections between them.
Mm-hmm.
It means all the acharyas are putting them, but they'll just put it as part of the commentary or that. Like Ramanuja, I think, is between every verse. He puts, you know, that this is now made this point, now that will bring us to this point.
Mm.
And then there's the next verse. And so like that, this whole commentary is like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the same point is bringing mind, but he's bringing it out as part of the conversation.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Like that. So they do that, you don't do that.
No, but I heard it.
Yeah, just not so important. Wow. Well, I was thinking we were going to go on for the rest of the book with this one, but they did everything at once.
Yeah.
And the purport is you know.
Yeah, it's you know, not as big.
One-tenth of.
Yeah.
So 10:19-42. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those which are prominent." Because in other words, he's an unlimited everything. How, you know, a mosquito is there and, you know, you go to hit it, but they're so light that just the air movement of your hand moves them out of the way so you can't hit them. Just that lightness, you know, that's Krishna. You know, otherwise, where does a mosquito get that power? It's not that, you know, he's sitting there and, oh, we have to do this and that and put it in here and go back. No, it's just Krishna's potency, you know. So it's, but so he says only those that are prominent. Now, otherwise, then, you know, you have, you know, the Oxford, the full, complete Oxford dictionary would still, that much volume would still not be able to get into all the opulences, you know.
Atomic fraction.
Hmm?
It would be an atomic fraction.
Yeah.
Of,
you know, the potency of the four-legged walker of, you know, the old lady next door, you know, is Krishna's potency. And that's the you know, the front left leg. Now the front right leg is also, and then the front like that. Now that it doesn't, you know, scrape away that potency of the rubber being able to be resilient, that it can tolerate the pressures and the scraping and not be worn, that's also, and that's the front left one. Now you have the front right one, the back right one, and all that. Now the potency that the rubber has the power to stay onto the metal and not fall off, despite its ability to be able to, you know, move with it, that's still Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Right. So now you can understand why only the prominent ones. You know, now the grip in the old lady's hands that she's holding the walker. You understand?
A Jewish lady would say, oi.
Yeah. You left out the day.
Oi.
Oi.
You can also throw in, I think, Ashmir or something. So, you know, it's depending on how much it is, you know, it's like, you know, that's if it's light. Oh, wait, oh, you know, so, as you know, as it increases, you add a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, isn't there one? I can't remember it. You know, there's some of those we used to always say. So, something like, all I remember is the last word, Meshuggah. Something like that. It just means, you know, what's this? You know. Yeah, so it's like, I think someone once said that Yiddish has the most derogatory terms of any language in the world.
Like that.
No, no. There's conjuncts and other things to hold them together. Yeah, yeah. You know, like ands, buts, you know, ifs. You know, those things are there. The, a, you know. Yeah. You know. So all those things. Yes. But only of those which are prominent, O Arjuna. For my opulence is limitless. I am the super soul, O Arjuna, seated in the hearts of all living entities. Right, so that's the first. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all beings. Right, how their appearance, their maintenance, and their destruction. He's also doing that. He's arranging that. You know, because each one, how they appear, is slightly unique from the other. Generally, saying it's slightly unique how they're maintained throughout and how they disappear. It's always different. Right? Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Right, it means that you have all the 12 sun gods. He is Vamadeva, right? Because he's the so of them he's the, you know, the most prominent. Of lights, I am the radiant sun, right? Because it means light is there, it manifests, but the greatest of all light is the sun. Of the Maruts, I am Marichi. I'm not sure the particulars. Among stars, I am the moon. Right, you have so many stars in the sky, the moon's the most prominent. Right? Of the Vedas, I am the Samaveda. Of the demigods, I am Indra, because right, he's the head. Samaved, because it basically deals with the glorification of the personality, like that. So it's considered like your Prayojana, Like Rick will be your Sambandha, Yajur will be your Abhideya, and the Sama will be your Prayojana. Atarva is miscellaneous. What doesn't fit into the other three? If you want to know how you make a chariot and stuff, that's Atarva.
Important.
Yes, no, it's important stuff. Of the demigods, I am Indra, the king of heaven. Of the senses, I am the mind, because it controls everything else. And in living beings, I am the living force, consciousness. Because he is consciousness. You know? And so we are, being a part and parcel, then we're minutely conscious. But because he is consciousness, he's also conscious of what we're conscious of. Yeah. But fortunately, no one else is. And he's keeping his mouth closed. He's confidential. That's why he's a friend. Right? That's what I said. Because if he wasn't a friend, then he'd tell everybody else what you're thinking. Of all the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva. Of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the Lord of Wealth, Kuvera. Of the Vasus, I am Fire, Agni. And of Mountains, I am Meru. In other words, he's of whatever there is, he's the greatest manifestation of that. But at the same time, he is everything else also. Mm-hmm. He is the mountainness of mountains, but of the mountainness, he is Meru, because it's the greatest of all mountains. Does that make sense? So prominent means where the maximum, you know, the fullest manifestation is. But he's still whatever that quality is in all the other forms, he's also that. It's not that he's... Mm-hmm. Not, that's why he's only bringing out what's the prominent one, so you can start to catch. Because, I mean, here we have, you know, over a page, so there's plenty to think about. You know, so also that you have those little clicker things that hold the walker together, you know, so that when you open it, then it stays there and doesn't those little buttons and something like that. And so the power of the buttons to hold it from going, at the same time, it's the lightness of the aluminum of it, so it's not too heavy. You know what I'm saying? Like that, you can go on unlimitedly about, you know, one walker like that. Of priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief, Brihaspati. Of generals, I am Kartikeya, and of bodies of water, I am the ocean. Of the great sages, I am Bhrigu. Of vibrations, I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy names, Japa. Right? Because that's what Manu was mentioning about your sacrifice, the best. You know, it's always comparing it back to sacrifice, because of sacrifices, Japa is the top, yes.
Bhrigu, that's why he's giving the Amashashtra. Because he's Krishna himself.
Bhrigu, yeah, of sages. So he's because Bhrigu means of all the means, because generally you'd hear from a Brahmin, so the greatest Brahmin in the line of Brahmins hurrying down is Bhrigu. So those connected back to Bhrigu. But they're in that line of Brahmins, those are considered the best. So even in the Samskar, you know, when they have the Upanayanam ceremony, then there's a general rule for everybody. And if they're from the Bhrigu line, then there's a little bit of extra stuff for them. How they tie the knot, how they do this, is some extra just to so that they stand out. And when they give the line, Mahabharata goes down the line of Brahmins, and that, it goes down the Bhrigu's line. You know, so all these so many personalities, it's going down his line. And then there'll be, you know, those will connect to other stories that go from there. But the first starting of the line of stories is coming down through Bhrigu. You know, so he's the most prominent. Yeah, so then Bhrigu is speaking, so then no one can complain. Because if Brahma's not speaking, who would be the next best? So Bhrigu, he's a Brahmin, everyone would accept. Yeah. And of immovable things, I am the Himalayas. Right, so then you're looking at the immovable aspect of mountains, and he's in Himalayas, because they're big. They're big. You know, it's like you go on the airplane and you go over, you know, the Alps. You know, it's just, you know, you watch a little while, and then, you know, you kind of get in the tops, and then you can see the other side, or go over the Rocky Mountains or the Appalachians or anything like that. You go over pretty quickly, like that. You know, but the Himalayas, you're flying for hours and you're not over them. You know, they just go on and on and on, yes.
Does it mean that the Himalayas never had wind? Because mountains have wings.
No, there were just a lot of mountains with wings. I guess they just happen to be all flying around the same area. You know, saying it's not that the mountain, just let's say, like the bird, it has wings, right? But it's not that it just flies anywhere. It's got a place where it stays. So the mountain is here, but it just might occasionally fly off somewhere and land over here and then get up and fly back. Problem is when it lands over here, that just happened to be a village or a city. So because of that, then, you know, when they're sitting there, then, you know, all their wings were cut off so they wouldn't fly around. Very big wings, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but you definitely is, I mean, that's probably, you could say, one, how you say, of these science sci-fi movies they haven't done, you know, giant crickets, you know, angry tomatoes, they've, you know, done so many, eagles, you know, things like that, right, you know, like that, but they've never done flying mountains.
Avatar they did.
Huh? They were floating, they were flying.
They're getting close.
No, I don't think they'll go there, it's too far out for them.
They didn't raise it yet.
That's there. Oh, we're already done. Okay, so we'll end there.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Jaya Sama, Veta Bhaktivinoda ki, Janitai Govardhana.